So what was the original, what was your original mindset when you were thinking, like, let's take this character to the panel? How did that all come about?
Well, it's a long story. I've been working on this for many, many years. It really was like about 2000, like 14 years ago, really, I started creating this whole story, because it's a big epic that's in my head. And the first one is Hollow Planet, just the first book. But this story I've been building in my head for a long time. And basically what was happening was I was living in Los Angeles. I was doing the Larry Sanders Show. And I thought that my career was going to be different than it had been. I thought that I'd be, I guess I was naive at the time. I assumed that because of all the characters that I played, I assumed that I'd be allowed to play everybody. But I had not anticipated that being openly gay as I was at the time would put a real stop to that. And I was getting very frustrated about only being allowed to play one type of character, and that was the gay character. And they were always like the politically correct, positive role model character.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that kind of character that minorities have, where they have to reflect everything and they've got to be positive. And all that bullshit that is such an enemy of art.
Absolutely.
You know, human beings are edges and, you know, darkness, and there's places that aren't positive. Anyway, so I got really frustrated, and I just thought one day, what am I going to do? I want to do something big, and what do I love? And I knew that I loved two things really in terms of more than anything, and that was comedy and fantasy. That was, as a kid, I loved fantasy. I loved science fiction and fantasy. And if I hadn't become a comedian, I think that's where I would have gone. So I started putting all my books together that I really loved, and Journey to the Center of the Earth, and Tarzan, and the John Norman books. I don't know if you recall them, the Gore books. They were very controversial kind of S&M slave books that really perverted a whole generation of kids when I was young. And our parents had no idea what was going on in these books. And I thought, well, I looked at all these things that I loved, and I went, what do I want to do? And then I thought to myself, what character do I have that is the complete opposite of all these characters that Hollywood is only letting me play? Who's my straightest guy? And I went, Danny. And I also realized that Danny was a kind of a character that you could throw anywhere. I wanted to take a character, and I wanted to, like, take everything away from this character and see if they survived. That was the beginning of this epic. And I knew that Danny was the type of a character that no matter what you did to him, he would just go, well, I didn't see that coming, but let's keep moving forward. You know what I mean? He just takes everything and it's like, well, that's water off a duck's back. So I thought, he's the perfect kind of everyman. So I thought, I'm going to combine the two things. I'm going to take Danny Husk and I'm going to put him in a fantasy epic. And then the third thing I wanted to do was I thought, and I'm going to make it sexy. Because one of the things that I've always disliked about science fiction and fantasy and that genre is they're not sexy. They're sexy in a way that I find boring. Fanboy sexy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I wanted to do it. I wanted to be a real sexuality. The first book doesn't really tackle that. That's the second book. But anyway, so that was basically it. And then I started to basically think about what could I do to Danny, and it just hit me, I'll send him to the center of the earth, and I'll make him a slave. And then I thought, oh, I'll make him a sex slave, because Danny's like amenable to whatever people want. He's like, well, that's I didn't see that coming, or that's not for me, but let's just see how that works out. Because he's he'll just do whatever, he's amenable. So that's a very long answer, I know.
No, it's but okay.
Really, so that was it. And so I started from nothing, and I thought, I'm just going to start from nothing. And my first image was a telepathic mammoth. So I thought, wow, everyone's going to love that. So I wanted to put all these things in that I would love as a boy. I thought, I want to write an epic that a teenage boy would read, or a teenager of any boy or girl, and would go, I'm not supposed to be reading this. That was I thought, I'm not supposed to be reading this, and that's what I wanted. So that's basically where it started, and then all the stories just they just start coming to me. and the character started growing from that. But it really just started with me throwing Danny down a hole and figuring out what would come from that. So in all the things that I've done in my life, I've never started anything so blankly. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It was a real blank slate, and I went, I just know what I want to do to this character, and then I just trust that the story will come. And for 14 years, the story has been coming to me. And then, originally, I thought it would be a big movie. And I wrote the first book as a screenplay. And then I kept trying to get it made, but I was, again, very naive. I had no idea that I wasn't big enough to get something like this made. But when I started writing the epic, I went, I'm not going to think about anything like, this is too expensive, or you could never afford it, or how are you going to make a 28-foot blue woman? I just went, I'm just going to let my imagination run riot. And I'm not going to have any break. I'm not going to put any breaks on my imagination. So that's the philosophy behind it. And then after years of trying to get this screenplay made, where people would go, wow, this is an original story. Jeez, I've never read anything like that. Holy cow. You realize that's code for, we'll never make this movie.
Oh.
And so then I went, well, I have to tell this story, because the story just seems, it has to be told. So I thought, well, maybe this would make a great graphic novel. And then, so I pitched it to graphic novel companies. And Stefan's company bit right away. He loved it. And so that's where it started. And so my master plan really is, hopefully one day when I get the 3 books out, people will go, wow, this would make a great movie. Or maybe a great animated feature. Or maybe it'll make a great television series. But right now, I just want to make a great graphic novel series.
For people that, let's just say hypothetically speaking, somebody doesn't read comic books, but they're kind of listening to this right now, and they're like, oh, this sounds kind of interesting. I really liked his work that he's done in the past, or I like what he's doing now in Hannibal. How would you pitch this to them? How would you basically tell them how it's cool? How would that work?
How it's cool?
Uh huh.
Well, cool. I don't know if it's cool. Well, I think it's, I don't think there's anything else like it out there. I mean, it's funny, it's sexy, and it's full of high adventure. And those are the things that I want. And I think it's beautifully illustrated. It's realistic. That's another thing I wanted when we finally started to put it together. I didn't want anything that looked remotely anime. I find that a very disturbing genre. I don't like it at all. I wanted it to look realistic. I guess the aesthetic that I was going for was, when I was a child, I was obsessed with Johnny Quest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Yeah,
Johnny
absolutely.
Quest?
Uh-huh.
So that was the kind of look I wanted. I loved that Johnny Quest look. And that was it, you know, yeah, so this is basically like Johnny Quest. It's like Johnny Quest's dad. You know, what was it? And Race Bannon. Dr. Quest. Remember
Dr.
Quest?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it's that kind of a look and a feel. But I wanted it to be adventure, but adult adventure. But not like a heavy metal, like, although I did love heavy metal as a child, but like hot, sexy, but not like, I didn't want women with giant tits and 3-inch waists, and you know what I mean? I wanted to be real. I wanted to, I guess, I wanted to take this series and I wanted to kind of like, blow apart the genre. I like doing that. I thought, I'm going to take this genre, I'm going to kind of blow it apart and tell an epic tale in a different way and comically.
As far as the current Kickstarter, can you just tell us a little bit about that, how that's been going?
Oh. Well, you know, the first book, you know, sold fairly well. But you know what it's like in this business. There's no money in it. Only for the big people like Neil Gaiman and those guys. That's what's amazing about this world is that people that are in comics, I just go, man, you must love it because no one's making any money. And so even though it sold well in the graphic novel world, didn't make any money. And so I guess there wasn't too much interest in making a second one. But for me, it's like, well, I have to make a second one, because if I don't make a second one, then there won't be a third one. And everybody, people have to get this, I have to tell the story. So I thought this would be a great way to raise money to do it, because, I mean, the money is not for me. I won't make any. I don't want any of it. It's basically, it's for the artists that create the comic for me, you know, and because they have to be paid. But for me, it's all about the end game, which is those three books, and then whatever. I mean, whatever happens, happens. I want the story to get out there. Once it's out there, then, you know, things take time. And I understand that things take time for people to discover, but I really do think that this is a series that has real legs. And it's not, like, I'm not a dilettante. Like, it's not like no one's ghostwriting it for me. I'm not doing it in a part-time way. I'm really dedicated to this story. And because I know it's a great story.
For up-and-coming and independent comic book artists and writers, how important do you think having a developer like Frozen Beach Studios and Comic Blender is to, like, helping you get your work out there? How have they helped you?
Oh, they've been fantastic. Stefan has been amazing. I mean, I couldn't have done it. It was Stefan who took the screenplay. The first book I took my screenplay, and it was Stefan who adapted it to the comic book form. So it's been absolutely indispensable. And then, you know, Charles and Kyle and the gang, those guys have been amazing. I mean, working on Hollow Planet was a really wonderful experience, and I'd never done it like this before. But it was such a great creative process, you know, basically creating the main characters. I mean, I'd send pictures to Kyle and of people that I knew or that I thought the characters would be like, or maybe a celebrity that whose face I'd like. And he would send sketches back and forth. And we did all of it online. And then once we settled on the main characters, how they looked, then it was time to start turning it into a graphic novel. So it's, in an odd way, it's almost like Stefan took my script and then directed it, I guess, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been very, very helpful. I mean, and putting Kickstarter together, I put this little video together on my own. I had my friend Robin Collins who shot it for me in L.A., and then he edited it, and then Stefan edited it, and we added and found music. But we put it all together, you know, the three of us, for nothing. And because I love the idea of Danny being stuck in literary limbo, because for me, it's like my characters are, they live. And so when they're not living, I just put them in storage. But you can only stay there for a long time, and not, you know, a certain amount of time. And so that was the idea for that basically I wanted Danny Means out, because the second book is, you know, the first book, as I say, is Danny. He gets everything fucks up for him. His whole life is taken away from him, including his mustache. And that was a lot of it, because I thought, I want to take away, like Samson. He's like Samson. Mm-hmm. You take away Samson's hair, he loses his strength. So that's what happened with Danny. But in many ways, when Danny is first enslaved and his hair is taken off, he does lose everything, but he rebuilds himself, and he comes back better than he was before.
How do you find time to do everything? I mean, you've got this. You were on the Daily Show covering the Olympics, which was hilarious, and then you're on Hannibal. So how do you find the time to do all this stuff?
I just, you know, the truth thing is, I'm just very. I have a lot of things on the go right now. The truth is, I was ill for a while. I had cancer,
mm-hmm.
and I beat it. And it's 5 years ago this April that I was diagnosed, and it'll be 5 years in November since my treatment ended, and they said I was cured. And since then, I basically made a vow to myself that I would basically rededicate myself to my work. And regardless if anyone's paying me for it or any of that stuff, I just decided that what I realized was that the joy is in doing. It's not in it's not in the end product. It's not about awards. It's not about making money or any of those things. Of course, you've got to make a living. But it's the joy of creation. And I realized that without, when I don't create, I'm not a happy person. And I think to myself that in some way, some of my cancer, maybe part of it, was caused by frustration and anger, you know, maybe bitterness or just things like curdling inside of me. And I thought that the only way to continue is to make stuff every day, no matter what. If it doesn't matter if it's a cartoon voice or you choreograph a dance or you take a picture or you draw something or you write a novel, or it's all the same thing. All that matters is that I must create something every day. And I find the time, because not finding the time is detrimental to me. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I find the time because you have to find the time, because it's your life. And I realize that creating, if you're a truly creative person, it doesn't matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought to myself, well, I, like certain projects, I went, well, I've got to get this Danny Huss thing going. I've got to get the second book out. I've got to do this. So I don't, you know, I lucked out the last couple of years. Since Hannibal was wonderful, because they brought me back in the room, you know, and they put me back on television, and it's a small role, but I love it, and I love the show, and it allows me to have a bit of a platform to do my real work. Not that that's not my real work, but, you know, it allows me to stand up, it allows me to write my graphic novels, and do Kids in the Hall things, and I'm making an album right now, like a comedy album, and so I'm very grateful for it. So, you know, I find that it's much less debilitating. It's much more exhausting doing nothing than a million things.
Absolutely.
When I was 5 years ago, when I thought things were not really, you know, I just saw darkness. You know, even before I was diagnosed with cancer, it was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma anyway, but I was miserable and exhausted all the time, and I was doing nothing. And now I'm constantly doing stuff, and I'm not half as tired. So that's how I do it, I guess.
In terms of Hannibal, how did that all happen? How did you land that role, and how do you feel being on the show?
It's crazy. I auditioned for it. I mean, I never get anything from an audition. I mean, the world has changed so much in the last few years. I mean, the last 5 years, it's been a drastic change socially. I mean, particularly, you know, in terms of like the roles that I'm allowed to do now, I think right now in this world, people will let me play all the characters that I can do. Like, I mean, I think 10 years ago things were much more political and polarized, and now people just go, "Ah, he's a performer. Who cares what he does in his private life? Let him play anyone." I mean, I'm dying to play a womanizer, and that would be my next goal. Hannibal, I auditioned for, and I never thought anything of it, because I thought there's no way I'm going to get on this show. It's a serious show. And then 3 months later, my agent called and said, they loved you. And I went, why? Who? For what? Hannibal. And I was like, what? I kind of forgot. I mean, and I went, really? And she said, yeah, NBC, you're their first choice. And I went, why? What happened? Is there something wrong? And then, should I send them a condolence letter? What happened? Did the network die? What happened? And then, you know, then I didn't even have a callback. I never even had a callback. And then a couple days later, they went, you're in. And I went, wow. And then when I met everyone in the show, it turns out Brian Fuller, who created the series, was a big fan of mine. And he had been a junior writer on Voyager when I had done Voyager years ago.
Wow.
And it was probably the most fun I had in American television in that time, other than Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the only time in my career in Hollywood where I was allowed to play a character that wasn't like a boring gay guy. And not that gay guys are boring, but you and I'm talking about the politically correct boring gay guy, the mammy. That's what I call them. And in that show, in Voyager, I played a womanizer, like a womanizing, hard-drinking alien. Of course, I had to have a giant blue head, but I knew, if I waited, one day I'd be allowed to play a womanizer with my own head. Still waiting, but it's coming. And he just loved it. I think Brian saw my name on the tape and went, ah, I like this guy. He can do it. And that was it. I'm not even sure if I don't think I really aced the audition or anything. I just think Brian Fuller went, that's who I want. I think that's it. He just went, that's it. And he likes to take comedians and people that are known for comedy and stretch them. So, you know, that's what he's doing. And I'm eternally grateful.
So, last question for me. How do you want this series, the second volume, to be ultimately remembered? What do you want people to take away from it?
Oh, the second one?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I want people to go, it's better than the first. I mean, the first is, you know, it's true. It's like the first is a pilot, in a way. I mean, you get to meet all the characters. You set everything up, all, et cetera, et cetera. And in many ways, the first book, the challenge of the first book is Danny's looking for his son. By the end of the first book, he's found his son, but the son doesn't know it. The second book is different. It's like the Lord of the Rings. It's the Two Towers. It's a bigger book. It's more. It's got more adventure to it. It's definitely got some pretty steamy sex. It's kinky. I'm just gonna say there's an encounter with a centaur, a female centaur. I'm just gonna say there is. And Danny. Basically, Danny just, he goes a little crazy. But he deserves it. After what he's been through in the first book, he deserves it. So I think I just want people to remember to think the second book's better and funnier and more adventure. And to go, God, I can't wait for that third book. But I think it's an epic. I mean, this is an epic. This is a, you know, a Messiah epic. Although Danny's not exactly the Messiah, he's actually more of a catalyst for it. I want them to go, wow, 10 extra pages. I want them to remember 10 extra pages.